Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting The Secret Room. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/secret. And thanks to Native. Native makes safe, simple, effective products that people use in their bathroom every day with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and enter promo code SECRET during checkout.
What's your secret?
I'm kind of embarrassed to say this. Just recently started a new job, and my supervisor and I seem to be on the same wavelength a lot of time, like the hive mind type of mentality. And I find myself hesitating 3 to 5 seconds before I say anything because I don't want to say the same thing as her.
Oh my God.
I'm afraid that she'll find I'm mocking her or, you know, making fun.
Thanks.
Did you feel kind of invisible?
I felt a lot of invisible, yeah.
Today, a woman enters the secret room with a story that focuses heavily on adult themes.
My name is Rose, and my secret is that I allowed myself to be psychologically controlled in an underground community for several years. I'm undergoing psychotherapy to help me overcome the symptoms I developed as a result.
But that underground community Rose was a part of is just the setting, not the cause.
How old were you when you found it?
Early 30s and newly divorced.
What happened to Rose could happen to anyone, anywhere.
How did you find it?
I found it online, yeah, through chat rooms. And I, before, had been completely oblivious to this lifestyle. Absolutely oblivious.
She knew the community was for her, but when she found it, wow.
My eyes about fell out of my head. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely fell out of my head because I could not believe that people did this. And not only did they do this, they did this in front of other people.
And along the way, she did things that might astonish you.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That was brave.
I know. Yeah.
Wow.
But now, 7 years later,
you know, remembering that is like unlocking a vault inside my head.
Mm.
It really is.
Welcome to The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories no one ever tells. I'm Ben Ham. All right. Here we go then.
Okay.
Hi, Rose. Welcome to The Secret Room.
Thank you, Ben.
You're welcome. Glad you're here. So you were in a... Sorry?
It's okay. Go ahead. I'm taking a deep breath.
Okay. So you were in a secret underground community for several years, and you suffered some trauma there.
Correct.
And what was life like for you before you found your way to this new place?
I think I was the classic bored housewife, working 40 plus hours a week in a marriage that was good, but a marriage that was... just a friendship, no sparks, not a lot of fun. We didn't have a lot in common, that sort of thing.
How long had you been married?
I had been married about 10 years, and I had been with him for almost 20.
I see. You were looking for something more out of life?
Correct.
What did you feel was missing?
I think I felt that I wasn't understood, that I had a lot to say, and not really being heard.
Felt kind of invisible?
I felt a lot of invisible, yeah. I think being in a relationship where you just come home, you go to work, you raise a kiddo, you know, and if your marriage is just one of simplicity, of paying bills, sometimes your mind can wander. And that's where I found the online community.
Was the divorce amicable?
The divorce ended up being very amicable. He is a phenomenal father and friend. I talk to him weekly.
You have custody of the kid?
I do, but he basically sees her whenever he wants.
Good. So you've got a good after-marriage situation going on with your ex?
Yes. He's remarried and is extremely happy.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that worked out.
Oh, me too. He deserves it.
And so you said you found a community.
Correct.
So how did you find it?
I found it online, yeah. through chat rooms. And I, before, had been completely oblivious to this lifestyle. Absolutely oblivious.
Well, I think it's time for the reveal, Rose. What's the lifestyle that you found online?
The lifestyle is BDSM.
Okay. For the uninitiated in our audience, can you tell me what that means?
BDSM means bondage, discipline, or domination, sadism, and masochism. That's what it stands for.
Okay, it's a mouthful.
It is an absolute mouthful, yes.
Hence the acronym.
Hence the acronym, yeah.
Okay, so is this something that you had thought about before?
No, when I say I had no idea, I was probably relatively naive, probably the naive of the naive, definitely.
And so when you first ran across this online, was your first thought to run away and be like, oh my God, I can't believe this? Or was it like, oh my gosh, what have I been missing?
It was, oh my gosh, what have I been missing?
Okay.
So I ran full forward. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay. So what was the first thing you did?
I chatted a lot. I talked to my ex-husband about it.
You were still married at the time.
We were still married when I found it. Yes. Showed him what I had found and all these things that you could do, what I understood it to be, which was actually what I didn't understand. And he 100% balked. He just did not feel comfortable. He did not want to be any part of it whatsoever. When I showed and explained it to him, he did not want any part of it whatsoever. He's what we called in the lifestyle vanilla.
Okay.
Vanilla means that, not that your life is boring, but it's just straight laced bedroom activity.
Not spicy.
Yeah. Straight laced.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nothing out of the ordinary, no outward thinking necessary. He was very happy with who he was.
You found this new lifestyle that was available to you. You were really excited about it. You wanted to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
And your husband said, not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Did your heart just kind of sink?
Oh, yeah. Because I thought I had found a key to spicing things up between him and I. Yeah. I thought right. I had hit pay dirt.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. And so what did you do?
With his permission, I ended up dipping my toes in. But right about that time during this transition, our marriage was basically over. And it wasn't over in a bad sense. It was time to move on.
So how did you dip your toes in?
I went to a dungeon party.
And before we talk about that dungeon party, can you tell us a little bit more what happens in it? Are there any codes of conduct, this sort of thing?
Yeah, there is actually a lot of codes of conduct. They really have the best intentions about your safety and about wanting you to feel safe in your environment, especially females. I think that's absolutely number one. And it's a great place to vet submissives or dominance at these munches.
Can you tell me what a dominant is and what a submissive is?
A dominant or top is, I guess the best layman's term, is somebody that takes charge and can control the submissive if she so chooses. He or she. A submissive or bottom is someone that likes to give up control. I think that's probably the simplest way to explain it. So when the two mesh, they usually work pretty well. Submissives may look for tops or dominants or sadists.
Okay.
There are so many in-betweens. Those are just...
Sure, there are a lot of flavors, I imagine.
There are a lot of flavors, correct.
And so I imagine, that a dominant tells the submissive what to do, gives that person instructions.
They can, yes.
Does it also extend outside the bedroom?
Yeah, I think the bedroom is probably the biggest misconception. There's a lot of fun bedroom play, but the part that I had the hardest problem with was the outside control in my everyday life. And that's when it can kind of take a toll if you're not prepared.
Hmm. So how did you find your dominant partner? I'm pretty sure there is not a checkbox for this on Tinder.
There almost is.
Okay.
Yeah. I've actually met him the first night I went to that dungeon party.
Okay. What is a dungeon party?
A dungeon party is almost what you might think it is, like off the top of your head, but less scary when done correctly. People are in the act of a scene, and is a scene when people role play together. So this dungeon party that went on was one that was very regular. It was run by wonderful people, and it provided a safe environment. And you could go there and you could either sit and watch, but you could also vet people and talk to other people in the community. And then on the outskirts of the room, there would actually be people playing and having scenes, and you could watch, almost kind of being a voyeur.
So tell me about what happens in a scene. What might I see if I were watching at this dungeon party?
There's so many different things you could see. People being tied up, people being suspended, people being spanked, being flogged, being whipped. If it's their specific kink, they might be talked down to. And that's, again, 100% consensual. It's just so many different things that could happen. Paddlings with a wooden paddle. And it can be two partners. It can be three partners. It can just be what your dynamic is.
So when you went to your first dungeon party, your eyes must have been just wide open.
My eyes about fell out of my head. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely fell out of my head because I could not believe that people did this. And not only did they do this, they did this in front of other people.
Right.
And they felt safe. They felt comfortable with themselves and with each other. And the trust in that room was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Was that something that really attracted you to it?
Yeah. I'd always been extremely introverted and I think internally kinky, and I just didn't realize it. But I saw the freedom, and I was scared to death, but I saw all the freedom that even the submissives who don't look like they have freedom because they're being tied up, mm-hmm. they have freedom. Right. They absolutely have freedom.
How do they have freedom?
The submissive is the one giving the control. If the submissive wants it to stop, it stops. It's supposed to stop. We have safe words in place. Submissives have all the control because without them, who would the dominance play with or interact with? It's something that I thought I lived by, making sure that internally that I maintained control and didn't get caught up in the situation. But sometimes being caught up without realizing is a lot of the fun. And if your feet aren't planted firmly, that's when some trouble can take place.
Like, what do you mean?
It's very easy when a submissive, I don't even want to use the word submissive because I want to make sure use myself as an example and not others. For myself, I didn't want to make decisions and thoughts on my own. I wanted somebody else to make them for me. That was a huge turn on to me. It was a huge emotional turn on to me. I was a single mom. I help run a business. To look at me, you would never think that I would be one that would want to give up control. At work, I'm the one grasping for control and setting the stage, as so to speak. But in private, I wanted to give it all up. I didn't want to hold on to it.
Did that give you a sense of relief or calm or empowerment?
Yeah, empowerment. Yeah. And by giving up control, you feel like you have control because that's a decision in itself.
When you were at this first dungeon party, did you feel like you just wanted to jump into one of the scenes and join them?
No. Oh my gosh, no. No. I wanted to look at everything and be like right up close. But at that first party, I didn't even know how, because you get pretty unclothed. Now, I wouldn't say naked because in my state, you have to cover your bits. So just for example, if you were to get an over-the-knee spanking, an OTK, you would, pull down your britches. Just the thought of doing something like that, I would have more clothes on than at a beach, but I felt more naked because that's showing something about you that you like. I liked being spanked. So that's a pretty big statement to somebody that would never say that out loud in person.
Did you go to the party alone?
I did. I did go to the party absolutely alone.
Wow. That was brave.
I know. Yeah.
Wow. You said you met someone there.
Yes. I met the man I ended up spending the next 7 years with at that party. Correct.
Wow. That was like lightning, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Perfect storm. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was also his first time as well.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How did you meet?
He was sitting in a table behind me. I was in front of him. And he came over and asked me if he could buy me a drink. And I said yes. I wasn't playing at the time, of course. So I was, you know, I didn't mind having a drink. Yeah. So we had a cocktail and sat and talked.
So you both confessed that was your first time?
Mm-hmm. We did.
And you probably talked about your histories and maybe a little bit what you wanted?
We did not talk about what we wanted whatsoever. He started the wooing. You know, you're beautiful. You know, you're, what are you doing here? Basically what you would do to hit on somebody. And being newly separated, I had been, you know, almost 20 years since I had been hit on. So hook, line, and sinker right there.
Yeah, you're like, wow.
Uh-huh.
This is what it's like. Forgot about all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I guess you didn't interview several doms before you settled on this one. This was just it. He was just handed to you right at that first party.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Which you should do, but I didn't.
Mm-mm. Right. Okay. When you partner up with a dom in a dominant submissive relationship, is there a ritual, you know, to symbolize the beginning of that relationship?
Yeah, somewhat. There are many different levels. You know, you can basically tell people that you're with your partner. You can also wear what we would call a collar. There are several different types of collars. Now that it's been so many years later, there are so many levels. Back for us then, it was being collared. It was him, me agreeing to be his and wearing his collar or some piece of jewelry that showed the community and reminded myself that I was taken.
Wow. And so did you wear a collar?
I did. I had a formal collar that was red and black, and it had a charm on the front of it. Over the years, I had different ones that I would wear during the day in my vanilla life. I wore bracelets that a jeweler would have to take on and off me. Basically, a jeweler put it on me, and then I ended up taking it off at a later time by another jeweler, but...
Did the jeweler ask you why you wanted to have that put on you?
No.
In a way that you couldn't take it off? Okay.
No, I suspect they see that quite a bit.
All right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, was it a special moment when he collared you? Did you have a nice dinner and, you know, have a ceremony or something, or was it more casual than that?
You know, remembering that is like unlocking a vault inside my head. It really is. I was collared at the same dungeon.
It was in front of people?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily a huge ceremony or anything, but it was known, and I bowed my head while he put the collar around my neck.
Wow, such symbolism.
Very symbolic, yes.
Yeah. And so after you bowed your head, and he collared you, how did you feel at that moment?
I think at that moment, I felt special. I felt loved. I was his. And at that moment, I didn't have a care in the world.
And as his new submissive, you were ready to do anything for him?
I would say, yeah, within reason. I had family at home. I had a kiddo at home. So I hesitate because I was putting in perspective which what I would do and what I wouldn't do. Yeah, anything that involved her was a definite out. And when I say involve her, I mean, you know, not spending enough time with her or something like that. That was, you know, that wasn't in question whatsoever.
And did your dominant partner understand those lines?
With my family, yes. Yes, he did.
Sounds like there were lines that he did not understand.
Yes, correct.
So we'll get to that. And I don't really want to draw comparisons with 50 Shades of Grey, because I think that's probably a very sugar-coated version of what it's really like, but it's a good pop culture reference point, I think.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah.
I just wonder if you had a contract like the characters did in that movie.
The answer is next, as The Secret Room continues.
Okay, everyone, who wants a deodorant that uses fewer, simpler ingredients that is both safe and effective? Did everyone say yes? I thought so. Well, look no further, because I have the answer for you. It's Native. People use their products made with trusted ingredients in the bathroom every day, and guess what? I'm a customer. Why, you may ask? Well, there are two main reasons, and I hope you'll allow me to enumerate. Number one, see above. The main thing that attracts me to this product is that it works and that it's made with safe ingredients. And yes, that means no aluminum. So when I put this stuff on, I don't have that feeling in the back of my head where I'm worrying about the effect this product might have on me. And number two, the fun stuff. There are a wide variety of enticing scents for men and for women, and they release new, limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year. Some of the classic ones you can always get are coconut and vanilla, which is their most popular, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and then the one I'm actually wearing at this moment, eucalyptus and mint. I'm glad you're here to enjoy it with me. And you can save a bundle, 17%, by subscribing. Save $2 per stick and have Native conveniently delivered to your door every 1, 2, 3, or 4 months. And to take any risk out of your purchase, Native offers free returns and exchanges in the USA. And the best news, I have a special offer just for my listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase by visiting nativedeodorant.com and entering promo code SECRET during checkout. That's 20% off your first purchase by going to nativedeodorant.com and entering promo code SECRET at checkout. Coming up, we'll hear about safe words and bruising that are a part of Rose's lifestyle. But first, what about a contract? Did Rose ever sign one with her dominant partner? You know, like in 50 Shades of Grey?
No, we didn't. We looked at them and we would talk about them and different things on the list. We would check off and not check off and hard limit, soft limit, red light, green light. So him and I never signed anything or did any fake legal documentation. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you had that collar and that was a powerful, powerful symbol.
That collar meant more to me than any piece of jewelry. And I hate to say this, but it meant more to me than my wedding ring did.
And did anybody ever notice your collar out in real life and say something to you about it?
Never. The leather one I only wore to BDSM events. And I would wear it out once in a while. You know, if I happened to be going somewhere to going to the event, I didn't mind wearing it. But if I was going to a wedding, I had a day collar that I wore that almost looked like a Tiffany choker chain. So you would never really know. And I see them out and about now, and I know what I'm looking at, but a lot of people just don't know what they're looking at when they see it.
And so you could exchange those collars during the day on your own, just as long as you're wearing one, you're fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about your relationship. In what sorts of ways did your dominant partner dominate you?
Definitely in a sexual manner. We did a little bit of rope. What I fell in love with at the time was masochism, and his true nature was sadism. And so what that means is, as a masochist, I fed off pain. So being spanked was never just a spanking to me. Spanking was something that I enjoyed a lot. Being flogged with a leather flogger was something that I enjoyed a lot. And I could take a lot of pain.
And you liked it.
And I liked it, absolutely.
And it was fully consensual.
Truly, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no question about that. I was a pretty heavy masochist, as we would call them.
Wow.
It tripped my triggers. And a lot of people say that you just have to be wired differently to experience pain and feel pleasure. I was also dealing with a lot of childhood psychological issues too. And I think the pain that I was receiving kind of help me deal with the pain that I had when I was younger. So it was a way to cover up one pain for another. I didn't get rid of it, but I was able to cover it up.
Sounds like something you've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a safe word?
I did have a safe word. Yes.
What was it?
My safe word is mercy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because I would never say mercy. Yeah.
Right.
Never.
Yeah, there's no room for confusion with that.
No, there's never. And it was, I don't think I safe worded once the entire time we were together. I think I might have, and it might have been because of technical issues, like I was going to throw up or something, and it was just I just got overheated.
So it's interesting that you say that, because that sounds pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find yourself to the point of where you, you know, felt like you needed to throw up a lot?
No.
Okay.
No, never. Just that okay. One time when I just got too hot in a room. Yeah.
I
but
see.
No,
okay.
Not at all.
All right. But you did take a lot of pain.
Yeah. I had broken paddles over my rear, been.
Oh my gosh.
Swatted with them and a paddle would break in half. Yeah. And that's not an uncommon thing, but that's just, yeah.
That's a lot of force.
It's a lot of force. Yeah.
So I imagine if you're getting flogged and you're getting spanked and you're getting paddled to the point where the paddles are, you know, cracking and breaking
mm-hmm.
in two,
mm-hmm.
that there's going to be some bruising.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
You bruise. I was always pretty good about getting bruises where it didn't show if I was going to the pool. Sometimes I just didn't care.
Okay.
If I had bruises and they showed. But yeah, I had a lot of bruises. But the thing about bruises is your butt kind of toughens up and the bruising, the capillaries stop expanding or stop bleeding. So your butt literally toughens up and the bruises are harder to come by. And bruises for me were memories of the night before. So, you know, we were always trying to get a good bruise in there, but eventually, you know, the bruises kind of stop.
So Rose, how did you hide the bruises when you went to work?
We would get hit in places that really didn't show. If I was going to wear a skirt and it was super important, like a family event, I actually have cream that you can buy from Walgreens that will eliminate bruises really quickly. And I was just super careful if I knew that I had to wear a skirt or a swimming pool, I would make sure that I was getting hit in covered places. But sometimes I just didn't care at all.
And did anybody ever say anything to you? Like, you know, you're walking around the pool with these bruises, like, hey, Rose, no. Everything okay at home?
Ben, it's amazing what people don't ask.
Right.
If okay. you just act normal, they're probably thinking, oh my gosh, that poor lady. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next day,
mm-hmm.
when you'd be at work
mm-hmm.
admiring your bruises, you'd feel kind of sexy.
Yeah. You know, you feel like, you know what? You feel powerful. Like you feel like, look what I just did. Look what I can do. And now I'm here conducting business and standing a little taller. And it's not really how it's supposed to be. I don't know. I kind of felt a little full of myself. I felt, you know what? I felt a little indestructible, which I think was probably a little bit of the ease of the controlling, because I was always felt super special because of the pain that I could endure, that I could take.
So how is it supposed to be?
I think it's supposed to be beautiful. It's supposed to be a beautiful moment between you and your partner that you can share together. Because it is a closeness when you share that with your partner. You know, the fact that this person did that, it's supposed to be done within love and with love and caring. Looking back on it now, I regret being boastful about it in my head.
Why?
Because there's other ways to feel good about yourself, you know, besides that. And at the time, I didn't see it.
You said a little bit ago that your dominant partner liked rope. Can you tell me what that means?
We dabbled in rope. He didn't really care for it. It was too time consuming. But a lot of members in the community are very excellent in rope skills, at tying and shibari, and so many that I don't even know. And they do beautiful artistic designs on people using rope. It's just amazing. And you can also hang from devices in your rope and like rope harnesses. You can have a scene with just rope, rope and pain. You can mix and match your own flavor. I, for one, did not connect with rope, so we did not use a lot of restraints, per se.
So, Rose, when you've answered some of my questions, I've noticed a tinge of, I don't know, sort of regret or, you know, it sounds like there was a little something else going on behind the scenes that you weren't really, you're not really okay with.
Yeah, that's the hard part, Ben.
Coming up, Rose grapples with the deterioration of her relationship, and she makes a striking decision about what to do next. Stay with me. The holidays are a time for family, joy, presents, and food. But sometimes, a little bit of stress can get mixed in with the good stuff. You know what I mean. And sometimes you just need someone to talk to help you sort it all out, to give you a little perspective. Have you ever thought of giving BetterHelp Online Counseling a try? BetterHelp is there for you when you need them. And because they're online, they could not be more convenient. They have you covered if you want to have a secure video or phone session, or if you just want to text. And you can communicate with them from your phone or from your computer. No driving to an office, just connect from your device, in your home, or wherever is comfortable for you. And they have broad experience, expertise in areas that might not be available locally to you. For example, they have licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, stress, and anxiety, but also in sleeping, trauma, and sexual or gender identity. BetterHelp is available worldwide with 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states by text, chat, phone, or video. They're waiting for you when you need them. Anything you share with your BetterHelp counselor is confidential. They're affordable, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/secret. Fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor. Start communicating in under 24 hours. That's betterhelp.com/secret for 10% off your first month. We're back, and Rose struggles with the nexus of the problems in her relationship and the community in which she and her partner were enmeshed.
There's a persona that people saw, and then there's what was going on behind the scenes and what I knew of my dominant. The emotional abuse that he inflicted.
Not supposed to be that way.
It's not, because even though we role played that I was his most prized possession, I should have been, just as a human being. That's the whole point of being collared. That's not the whole point, but you know, the point of accepting a collar is that you're their most prized possession, and I was not treated that way.
You had submitted yourself to him completely.
Yeah.
In a way that was beyond the way you had given yourself to your husband.
Yeah.
In your marriage.
Correct.
This was a completely different form of commitment.
Correct.
One that required a lot more trust.
Yes. Yes.
Sounds like your dominant took advantage of that and didn't treat it with the respect that it deserved.
No, he did not.
Can you tell me how he abused you psychologically?
Oh, you know, it started off small. It started off with, you know, I think we should work on your weight. And I was overweight. And, you know, let's work on your weight. And so that was always something that was playing in the back, talking about my food and putting me on diets and making there be rewards. And he was so in control during a scene in public and even in private. But there was a part of him that, if we were talking and in conversation and I misstepped, the wrath would come down on me like just tenfold. And it made it more difficult because this man was someone that I was supposed to be absolutely pleasing to. That was my goal. I wanted to please him more than anything. And when I couldn't, he would say awful things.
Like what?
The very first time I remember just being in utter belief, we were driving to a small play party, and and I was going by directions, and I am directionally challenged. I call them and I am like, I am so lost. I'm going to be late. I don't know where I'm at. And he screams at me at the top of his lungs that, you know, there's only one thing I'm good for, and that's slinging donuts because of the business that I'm in. I was just mortified, you know, and I was like, can't you just tell me where to go? And he's just irate and temper filled, so upset with me. That was just one of many times. So from then on out, if we were going somewhere and I was heading there on my own, I would be reminded of how directionally challenged I was and how bad at it I was. And maybe I need to follow and maybe I can't do it on my own. And it would never stop.
At first, it didn't feel good, of course.
No.
But you didn't realize that it was maybe as bad as it was.
Yeah, I thought, oh, he's mad. I made him mad. I'm supposed to be pleasing. I didn't please him. This is what happens. If somebody said that to me now, oh my gosh, you know?
Right.
It's, you just don't talk to people like that. And then it just didn't stop after that. It just didn't stop.
Can you give me some examples of how the abuse increased?
We would be trying to fix a computer problem and he'd be on the phone. He would just berate me over and over and tell me I was too stupid to figure out verbal instruction, to the point I was in tears, just going on and on and on.
To the point you were in tears?
Yeah, to, you know, the name calling and the, why can't you figure this out? Why can't you push this button correctly? Why can't you download this program right? And why can't you do this? And why can't you do that? And it sounds so small, but it was another piece of the pie of bringing me down.
You know, and his position in your life was so important.
So important. Yeah. He wouldn't let me cook anything for him. Every meal I made for my family, I'd offer to bring him something. I was not a good cook. I couldn't make a meal to save my life. I didn't know how. Every time I talked about making something and being excited about a food product is like, you either don't need to eat that, or you can't make that, or it would taste bad and somebody's always made it better. And
so you were in a relationship with him for 7 years.
Yes.
About how far into the relationship did this behavior begin?
I would say probably about a year. Oh, my self-esteem was so low that I would just take it, because 20 minutes later, he could be saying a lot of nice things, giving me a lot of nice feedback. But that would be after the barrage of talking and to the point of tears. Almost like bringing me to that one brink and then bringing me right back. You know, oh, maybe it's not so bad.
Do you think that that technique helped him keep you around longer?
Yeah, because I think abusers, what they do is they tear you down step by step. They're very good at bringing you back up just enough to stay. Make you feel like maybe things are going to get better. Maybe things are better. Maybe there will be better. Maybe if I try harder, maybe if I'm more submissive, maybe if I can masochistically be more pleasing, that'll please him. Like my whole life was at that time, what can I do to make this man happy? What can I do to make him happy? He wanted to become poly, which means have another partner.
How'd you feel about that?
I vehemently opposed to it. I did not want that at all. He did it anyway. I didn't have a choice. For the sake of the community and for the sake of giving in and wanting to be pleasing, I would just stop complaining and try my best to make good of the situation.
So he had another partner?
Yes. We had several.
And were those dom sub arrangements also?
Yes, and different varieties, but they were all submissives and masochists. Mm-hmm.
So he had several submissives.
Yeah, it would usually just be three of us. I would say almost always there would be three of us. But yeah, I did not feel like I was the type of person at that time that could do poly, that could be in a non-monogamous relationship. And I felt like I didn't have a choice. He didn't give me a choice. You know, I had to accept these partners that came in. So I was always in a state of jealousy and envy, and I would be upset And I would try to express my thoughts with him and my feelings. And he'd keep telling me that I'm the primary partner and not to be jealous and that I was ruining things. And how can you be so jealous and stuff like that? And he would constantly be telling me this. And I thought, there's just something wrong with me. Why can't I just be okay with this? And I wouldn't believe what he was telling me. Like, I thought that I was going crazy. You know, and I'd say, you know, what about this, this, and this? He'd say, you're imagining things. There's nothing going on here. And I found out later that all my insecurities that I was feeling were true and that he was cheating, which is the absolute worst thing you can do when you're in a quote unquote poly relationship is to cheat because you have permission to be with other people.
So he was with people without telling you about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he had permission.
Correct.
How'd you find that out?
I found out through the last submissive sister that I had, who I thought had my back. She said that she had my back and that she knew that I got treated poorly and she would always stick up for me and try to talk him down. And I had broken up with him and I invited her over to my house before I was going to end the relationship. And I had all his stuff packed up and I wanted her to get it out of my house. And I told her what I was going to do the next day. And she's like, you know, because we had an affair before. And I was just like, what? You know, so all my feelings were justified. And I was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken that I could be hurt so badly.
So the constant drumbeat from him was that you're a failure.
Yeah.
Did you feel at this point that it was him that was failing you?
Yeah, I was only scratching that surface.
But you were ready to move on, to end the relationship.
Yeah, I had been seeing a therapist for about a year prior because I felt like I was in this relationship and I was doing it wrong. And I wanted the therapist's help to help me get along with him better. And then I started to realize what was going on and I wanted to leave. I wanted to leave him.
What did the therapist think about all this?
She's amazing. She never made me feel like I was wrong. She would always remind me the good that I had.
Yeah.
And she never told me to leave. She always would ask me, how are you feeling? What do you want to do? We talk about it now, and it's a different conversation. But during that time, she was very good about not giving me an opinion. Her main concern was making sure that I could see my worth.
And you see your worth today.
Yeah,
Right?
Yeah.
Good.
I do see my worth today. Absolutely. Yes.
How did you break it off with him?
We met for lunch and we met at his car. It was very symbolic to me. I had my collar on. It was actually padlocked and I had a key and he had a key. I met him in his car for lunch one day. He got in his side of the car and he looked at me and he saw that my collar was already on because normally when we met for lunch, he would put my formal collar on me and I would wear that. I knew that he had cheated. I just wanted to leave with dignity. I told him that I wanted to be released and that I didn't want to wear his collar anymore. And he was probably as dumbfounded could look. He absolutely couldn't believe it. He was just shocked.
I bet.
Yeah.
So being so, you know, enmeshed in that lifestyle.
Yeah.
I would think that would be a really, really hard question to ask. It's interesting to me that you even felt that you had to exit that way.
Yes, yeah.
You could have just called him up and said, see you later, you know?
Yeah,
Instead, you decided to just stick with the program and get out the way you got in with the collar.
This was the absolute lifestyle that I lived. I believed it. I lived it. Every activity I did outside my family was lifestyle related.
Were you concerned when you were getting into that car and you were going to drop this bomb on him, that he might say no?
Yes.
Like, I'm not going to release you.
Correct.
Were you prepared for that? What were you going to do if those were the words that came from his mouth? Rose is in self-care mode now. And coming up, An unexpected and devastating event challenges Rosa's standing in the community she loves. If you love radically honest true stories, I want to personally recommend a podcast I know you'll love. It's called Risk. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share, stories that are too uncensored for public radio, and nothing's too intimate or too loaded. The stories on Risk are sometimes hilarious, sometimes scary, and sometimes they're truly beautiful. Like the one about the guy who got kidnapped by a drug cartel, or the girl who discovered she was living with a cannibal, or the woman who learned the person she was sharing kinky fantasies with online was actually her dad. These stories are told with so much compassion and emotional intelligence, it is inspiring. Find it all at risk-show.com or just search your podcast app for Risk. That's R-I-S-K exclamation point or risk-show.com. Sitting with the sadist in his car, Rose has found herself in the driver's seat, metaphorically. And what would she have done if he had declined to release her?
I would have left anyway, but I was prepared for him to say that. But I think what he was prepared for me to do was to come back to him. That would have been more rewarding to have me grovel and to come back.
Did you ever feel tempted to go back?
I never felt tempted to go back to him or to have a scene with him. I did continue to have some contact because I was starting to get angry and starting to find a voice and starting to lash out. I was so mad at the cheating. I was so mad at my submissive sister for betraying me as well. I felt like an utter fool.
Did word get out in the community about this?
Yeah, because you immediately take it off your, there's an online website, you take it off that. And my friends are all standing behind me and knew about it. So word got around pretty quickly.
And so did that hurt his standing in the BDSM community?
So the thing about this man is he doesn't have a great standing in the community. He's known as an asshole, as a snake, as a liar. But the community keeps him. And it has taken me a long time to figure out what exactly that's about, because he's a bad man. He really, really is. They warn each other about him, but he's got two permanent partners. I don't know if he plays outside of those two partners, or I don't know.
I'm picturing you in the car, lowering your head to have your collar removed.
Yeah.
Such a powerful image. When he unlocked that padlock on the back of the collar and the collar fell loose and you were free from it, how did you feel at that moment? Was it happiness? Was it grief?
To be honest, I felt a little lonely. I felt like I had just accomplished one of the biggest steps in my life. And the grief of not being owned anymore was great.
Did you regret getting into this community in the first place? Did you think, gee, I should have just held on to my vanilla marriage and just stuck that out and skipped this whole chapter?
I'm glad I didn't stick with my vanilla husband, because he is very happy and his wife has often said that he is the love of her life and he deserves that. And I, 3 years ago, found somebody that's the love of my life.
Are you guys in the community together?
No, I had to completely step away.
How do you feel about that?
The community, I figured out how to live without them. But in January, I had to let the last two friends go that I had.
because of a disagreement we had. And I just can't agree with their line of thinking. And I'm at a point in my life where I have to put space between that line of thinking and how I want to be and how I want to think.
What was your disagreement?
The disagreement, there was several things attached to it, but it was... it's hard. My friend, my best friend, who is somewhat active in the community still, we had gotten into an argument over some lifestyle policy. And right at that same time, we had lost somebody that had been very close to us. She had passed away.
Sorry.
So we were grieving, and which our emotions were high. And at her funeral, I couldn't go because he was going to be there.
Oh my goodness.
And it's not that I haven't had the therapy to help me. I can stand in a room with him in it, and I have no emotional reaction to him whatsoever. But to be in a room with a man that has caused you so much psychological abuse and watch him grieve and have him watch me grieve over my friend, I didn't think he had any business being there. And because he's allowed in the community, he was there. He was welcomed, you know, somewhat. I mean, it's a funeral. It's very odd. The community is not all about me, and it's not all about that situation. It's just that was, amongst some other things, the straw that broke the camel's back when I realized that I was friends with people that walked the circle and didn't have a problem with it. And I can't walk that circle with them anymore. I can't do it. She texted me 15 minutes before the funeral was over because he left. And I'm like, you know, what good does that do me now? You know, I had no idea because we had had such a falling out, you know, over the community that her and I, neither one could stand by each other when we needed it. I just can't let the community that I know to affect me that way. My story is not unique. There are a lot of people that do just fine, but there are a lot of people that get hurt in the community, and it just saddens me that I was even part of newbie training and newbies coming in. I would sit and talk with them, and so many of them didn't heed my warnings and would just run like I did. Run with a gusto into it, and they come out wishing they had done things differently.
What a journey.
Yeah.
And so your current partner knows about all this?
Mm-hmm. He knows everything, yes.
And have you told your ex-husband?
My ex-husband knows that I went towards the lifestyle, and he was okay as long as that I was quiet about it with our child, and of course I was.
He doesn't know everything you went through?
No. No, he does not. Mm-mm.
Sounds like you miss it a lot.
There's some things I miss, and then there's some things I miss my friends.
Does your partner give you what the community gave you in terms of, you know, your desires?
My desires, when I started to do my therapy and started to dig and unwrap myself and figure out what was going on, my masochistic tendencies have are almost non-existent now.
Interesting.
He's willing. Mm-hmm. He's a great partner.
That's awesome.
And he also knows that there are times I have triggers.
And where did you meet him?
I met him on a dating website.
A vanilla dating website?
A little bit vanilla, but yes, yes.
Okay. There weren't any BDSM check boxes on that website.
No, well, there was, but we were just, okay. Yeah, but we didn't come together like that. We just wanted to date casually.
Right.
And we just wanted to just have fun together, and he's absolutely amazing.
Well, Rose, I'm glad you found a great partner and that you've also found yourself in a healthy relationship.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Why did you want to tell your secret today?
I wanted to tell my secret today because I want women who have been abused to know that somebody will hear you if you just seek out the help. And I want people to know when you get into a lifestyle, any lifestyle, that watch your surroundings and be smart about it. And I'm sharing my secret today because if one person could stop before getting hurt emotionally, that would be a blessing.
What a story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Rose. It was a pleasure.
And so ends Rose's tale of self-extraction from an abusive relationship cloaked in the secrecy of a BDSM community. A community that meant so much to her that she adhered to ritual even when breaking from her abuser. In The Secret Room Unlocked, Rose tells me what happens later when she and her partner go to a lifestyle party and are warned by a friend that the sadist is on his way. Also, Rose and I sit down for a frank, no-holds-barred discussion about just what goes on in a dominant-submissive relationship. That one is eye-popping, and you will love it.
Oh, yeah. And in the bloopers, wait until you hear what Ben thought Rose's safe word was.
Oh, here we go.
Susie Lark hosts The Secret Room Unlocked. Today's companion episode drops in 1 week at patreon.com/secretroom. And in pictures, see Rose and her partner now, their faces obscured. Also, a picture of Rose's formal collar around her neck. And see her bag of tricks. I'll just leave it at that. Find them all on social media. Just search at Secret Room Pod. Do you have a hopeful secret to share? Send it to me now at our website, secretroompod.com, where you can also find all our sponsor discount codes. It takes an amazing team to get this podcast to you every other Tuesday night without freaking fail. Let me thank Susie Lark, Sachelle Brooks, and Alessandro Nigro. Chet is the sound engineer, and our music and theme are by Breakmaster Cylinder.
This is A Secret Room, a podcast about stories no one ever tells.
I'm Ben Hamm.
I got this. Pod on, Ben.
Pod on, Rose.